Hey yo, what's up world? This is DJ JS1 of the legendary Rocksteady Crew. And right now, you're listening to The Library with my man, Tim Einenkel. Strictly the real hip hop. Peace.
Fuck is you talking about, man? Spit that monkey shit, nigga. We gorillas, nigga. Ape don't kill ape. Yo. Spit that real shit, nigga.
My next guest has worked with artists and producers such as Lil' Kim, Ice-T, M.O.P., 50 Cent, Redman, Jadakiss, Nas, Mobb Deep, the late great Sean P., Pete Rock, Ninth Wonder, Kanye West, Bob Powerful, Forrest Timberland, and many, many more. He's known as Dan the Man, and I want to welcome him to the Library with Tim Einenkel. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
How did you get started recording, producing, engineering, mixing, mastering, and a sound designer?
I used to live in Connecticut. I started in the basement, you know, with a cassette four track, trying to find anybody that did anything musically to record. And when I stopped going to college, my mother said, you need to find something that you could do with your life. And I found a school that did audio recording and engineering, which is, IAR.
Okay.
And I moved to New York in the winter of 96, went to school, and that's where I started.
Was a lot of, before the school, was a lot of the stuff you're doing to self-taught?
Yeah. Yeah.
How much do you think the school taught you, you know, from what you knew? How would you think the school actually, like, more, without crapping on the school?
You know, the school was really good. The school, especially at that time, with all the studios that were in New York, the school taught you the language and gave you the information you needed to know to get into a studio. If you went to a studio to get an internship or... They wanted to know that you knew what you were talking about, or you know what I mean? But even when you do go to school, the majority of what you're going to learn is going to be hands-on.
Right.
You know, they're going to tell you, this is a compressor, and this is what a compressor does. But that first time you actually look at the compressor, and you gotta feel it, you got to touch it, you got to know what's going on. But the school was great because it taught you the language, and it looked good on the resume saying, oh, you're going to school for this? You must be serious.
Right.
We'll give you the internship.
Do you remember the first record track you mixed in the basement? But also, do you remember the first record track you mixed, I guess, quote unquote, in your professional career?
Definitely don't remember the first record I mixed in the basement. What was good about... when you intern and you stay in that studio as much as possible, you get to, you know, get to get your hands on, and on the downtime, get to do your own thing. So I brought a few artists that I was working with in Connecticut up just to get my, you know, my feet wet and work on some things. So it was some artists that I used to work with. But one of the first records, I can't, it wasn't on his album, but it was like a independent, like a soundtrack thing, but it was a Kool G Rap record that probably never came out. And he wasn't there, but they came in with a record, and that was one of the first records I got to mix.
What was that experience like? I mean, if you're... I know he wasn't there, but there's always this imagination. Like, you go in, you meet, or you listen to, like, a hip-hop legend, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, how do I not fuck this up? And you know, I mean, for me, that would be like, how do I not fuck this up? Like, I mean, what was your approach to this?
Like I said, luckily I've been doing a lot of my own thing with artists that I knew just to get my chops. But yeah, you're like, holy shit, is that Kool G Rap's voice that I'm listening to? You know, but. You just try your best. And I'll tell you a story real quick. It's funny because that was on the humble. That was like a favor kind of thing. But I remember I was doing recording and I got a call from Bloodline. And it was a friend of mine that I met through the studio. And they asked me to mix a record for an album that was coming out for a soundtrack. And I didn't feel like I was ready yet. So I turned it down. It was like... it was the weirdest thing. It was like, you want to do everything that comes your way, but like, ooh, I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. But like after that Kool G Rap thing and more things, then it was just like, okay, I'm ready.
Was there fear that you turn something down and that kind of like people wouldn't see you as like the go-to guy for things? Or was that ever in consideration?
This was very, very early, but it was like, it was more fear that it wouldn't be up to par, and then I wouldn't get a call back.
Ah, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like I wanted to make sure, like, especially for that caliber, like for a major label or a major release, that I didn't want to screw my name up.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do the mix, and then they'd be like, yeah, well, that was garbage, and then they never call you again.
Right, right.
So I turned it down. So I'm going to wait till I know I'm ready.
All right, we're in your studio now. What is your ideal studio setup? I mean, I know the artist records behind the glass, but are you back here? Are you listening with headphones? Do you just have the monitors blasting or on? What is the, how do you monitor a studio setup the best way?
I go through the speakers. At the end of the day, for what we do as an engineer, your job is to make it sound good coming through the speakers. You know, and I feel like that's how you're going to hear it. If I mean, I've done headphone situations and wherever, but at the end of the day, you want to know what it sounded like coming through the speakers, how it feels coming through the speakers. So I got to keep those speakers on.
So what are you doing when the artist is recording? Do you work with artists that you have to like make eye contact all the time with, so they don't feel like no one's listening to them? I mean, like, so radio, I used to board op something, and we had a host that you would have to look at the host all the time, or they would stop talking, even though you're not the audience.
Right.
They would just stop talking, and you're like, why is there dead air? And then you look at her, and then she would start talking again.
Okay.
Is that a situation that happens with artists as well, or?
Yeah, I mean, every artist, the one of the best things about this job is every artist is different, and you got to really learn the artist. But good contact, it's, you don't necessarily have to look at them all the time. A lot of time I'm looking at them through the signal, but you just, they got to feel that you're there. They got to feel that you're into what's going on. So yeah, sometimes you got to look at them. Sometimes you got to give them a dirty face. Like what was that? Or, you know, but you have to have a good contact with the artist, because if they don't think you're into the record, then they're not going to be into the record. So I like to make sure, you know, we're eye to eye, even if we're not eye to eye.
Producers and artists, they come in and they seem to usually have ambitions or goals with this track they're laying down or they want to put together. So how do you, as the engineer, sound designer, how do you ensure that their mission is coming through? I mean, are you guys having a conversation prior to actually laying down the track? What is it like post-production? So how do you ensure that you're making sure that their goal with the track is coming through?
A lot of it is before they even get in the booth. You know, you put the beat on. Sometimes I'll get them to, you know, sing me the song or spit the verse before they go in. And then just so you're on the same page, you know where they want to go, and then do what you can to help get them there and beyond, which is the most important thing to me. Is like, I want to feel I know how you want the record to sound, but then my job is to take it to the next level.
Right.
Like, okay, this is what you want. Let me help you get it even better than that. But a lot of times it's just go in the booth and let me hear it, and we'll work it through. You know what I'm saying?
You know, you go to your website and your discography is just, it's a hip-hop and R&B. So prior to this being your career, what kind of drew you to this music and this culture?
Man, fifth grade, Peach Street, on TV. Gino. Changed my life. I had a friend in school when I was that young. His older brother was a DJ. I told him about the movie, and I'm like, yo, they're rapping, and this was like the '80s, so it was like, it was brand new, especially in Connecticut. It wasn't in New York. It was so accessible, but in Connecticut, like, you had to really dig and find look for that. But his brother, he gave me like a mixtape and Slick Rick and Dougie Fresh, and it was just really, it's something that I really just connected with. And then I just ran with it. I mean, I love all music. I had aunts and uncles that were in rock bands, and but it was just something about hip-hop that I really connected with and enjoyed.
When did you start listening to... Because there's two ways to listen to albums, right? There's, like, as a fan, but then as a mixer, engineer, sound designer. When did you start... When did you start listening to albums as you, as an engineer? Like, do you remember which album you heard and you're like, I want to kind of be able to recreate that sound?
Oh, man. Anything the Bomb Squad did. You know what I mean? They didn't do the N.W.A. album, but, like, listening to, like, N.W.A. albums, Public Enemy albums, the early Ice Cube stuff, it was just like, wow, how are they doing this? Like, this is amazing. There's, like, 10 different records inside this one record. And that really got me going on more of production and trying to understand how the records worked and how they did that, you know, as opposed to more of a... Run DMC album, which is just like drum machine and a cut. But when I started like the Bomb Squad, that's one of the main reasons I'm here.
I want to talk more about like roles in the studio, right? You know, as mentioned, you not just work with artists, but you also work with producers. So, but when you have a producer, let's say like a Kanye West, who's also an artist, does his role, if he's coming into a project as just a producer, does someone like him also throw in his artist hat? And if he does, what is your job there? Like, how do you kind of collaborate or make sure all these parts are working if the producer is now also trying to be the artist at the same time?
Yeah, you gotta let them do what they do. You know, as to me, as the engineer, you're the driver of the train. You're the operator. You're making sure that the creativity of what's going on is being captured, and you gotta really, you don't really set a tone. Sometimes people need that, but more times it's you put the artist or the producer in a space where they can become them and do what they do. So sometimes being an engineer is taking the lead and saying, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to do, or just letting them do what they do and capturing it. You know, that's really what being an engineer is capturing the creativity.
One of the great artists you worked with and who obviously, like, lyrically is amazing, seems like, I've never met him, but he'd also, from what people say, he seems like the funniest person in the world, is the late, great Sean P. Do you remember your first interaction with him? Do you remember what your first kind of conversation or meeting was like with him? And then what was the first track he laid down for you?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't know the exact first track, but I first met Sean. I was working on the Chosen Few Boot Camp album, and this guy is hilarious. And he tried to sell me a two-way pager. But that was the first time I worked with Sean, was on that Boot Camp album, and I was blessed because right after that we started on Monkey Bars, and it was literally like a 180. It was, you know what I'm saying, it was Sean, it was still like Ruck on the Boot Camp album, and at the start of Monkey Bars he just turned into a whole different artist.
Peep my words, I'm better with mine. Sean Price, remember this time. I'm all at Jaw Tap Park, Gregory Hines, strapped for the wall. I got the package of raw in the ass crack of this hall with the passenger door. Y'all niggas is whacking shit.
And it was great to see somebody. This is post working on that. You didn't really see it at the time, but like just totally reinvent themselves as an artist. It was amazing.
Was he the type of guy that when you're, I guess, mixing down the final product or putting little things into it, is he the type of guy that's more hands-on and is in studio with you, or does he kind of let you do what you do? Or do you, I mean, I imagine you build this trust relationship, right? Yeah. So does he let you do what you need to do?
At first, you know, Sean is on your back, pause. Like, what is that? Don't do that. Right. That doesn't sound right. What is going on? What the fuck is wrong with you? But I was blessed again. Like, I did, as far as Sean Price albums, I did every album, and as we got further, it got to be more like just send me the record and let me hear it. You know, if there was a problem, he let me know. But that's the game. It's like, let me do this so that there is no change this afterwards.
On a track such as Black Dynamite featuring Sean P and Buckshot,
yeah,
where you mastered, mixed, produced, recorded it, what was the creation process like there? And then kind of same question, is that something where Sean and Buckshot are in studio with you, kind of seeing what's happening, or are you just kind of bouncing the track by yourself and then sending it to them?
I'm going to try to do this the right way. Like the Black Dynamite track is something I did with Ninth Wonder. For that, do you remember the movie? Okay, so the movie was coming out, and they needed a track for the soundtrack, and it just wasn't working the way it was. So I took it and I kind of like did like this remix, like I revamped the whole thing. And it's funny because Sean had already laid his verse before, so that was what I had, and I built what I did to the record around what Sean did, and then Buck came in and did his verse after that was done. But Sean told me, he was like, "Yo, I hate when people take my verse and put it to another beat." But you killed that.
Oh wow!
Yeah, that was tough.
Is that the only track you've kind of ever done that for Sean, or?
I did one more on the Boot Camp album. I forget which one, but it was What You See. I think we did that. That's something somebody produced, and they didn't want to. They didn't get the track from the producer, so I took it and I did that same thing. And then, honestly, on his new album, we did a lot of that.
Peck, peck on Bernadette neck. Big breast, I'm a wreck. Let's have some sex. Yes, yes. Titty feel the best now. I can hold on. Yo, what the fuck?
Speaking of the new album, you're working on it now. It's coming out.
It is done.
It's done. It's
August
complete.
8th.
August 8th. Nice. One day before my birthday. Nice.
Ben, happy birthday to you.
Ben, thank you. First of all, what is your role on this album? But second, obviously Sean's not here to see the completion of the album. How are you ensuring that kind of it would get the Sean P stamp of approval? Like, how do you know? I mean, I know it's like years of friendship, but
yeah.
Are you doing anything that like making sure that this is going to, Sean would love this album?
Yeah. First of all, Bernadette was with me every second, you know, and nobody knows Sean better than Bernadette. So Bernadette was right with me. We had his right-hand man, Rim, who was with him for the past few years, you know, rucked down. I also made sure, you know what I'm saying, my partners that have been with, we've all worked with Sean, such as, C4, my partner Giambi, gotta shout Petro out. These guys have all been around Sean for the whole time. And you gotta know Sean. You gotta feel. You gotta keep that pressure like he's right behind you. Like, you know, Sean would be like, "What the fuck are you doing? What is that? That's trash. Why did you do that?" You gotta kind of literally say that to yourself. Like, what would Sean say to me right now? Now, what would Sean do? Or what would he say right now? And if he would give you the oof, that's what you want. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely Bernadette. She knows. And not to go spiritual, but like, Sean was there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everything that I did, we had the elements to put it together. But I felt, you felt Sean right there saying like yes or no, you know, so.
Yeah, imagine like a lot of it is kind of just a feel, right? Like you just kind of know, I mean, even when producing a track or building a track, it's like you press a button to play a beat, not because it was in your notes to be like, all right, I'm right here. Just kind of you feel that coming to you. Like, all right, this is it. This is what this piano perfectly right here.
So. Exactly.
I'm the shit up in my hood. I had three wishes. I wish that a nigga would step to the guard. When guard step, I step on your squad. Imperious Rex, the best definition of God. I swing things hurting. God body, aka the King James Version. Playing my shit, the same time hating my shit. Don't play with me, bitch. I make your bitch play with my dick. The
King X Rock. You've obviously worked with many greats. You've also worked with Mobb Deep. On Hell on Earth. Can you talk a little bit about what your role was for that album?
What I love about that, that was one of the first albums I got to assist an engineer on. I've been a part of a lot of great albums in a lot of different capacities and growing through my career. That was early. It was my second internship at a place called Axis Studios. And I started there, and then a few months later, I got hired as an assistant, and they were working on Hell on Earth. Like, right there, and then right after that, it was the CNN album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just a lot of great music going on in that place. But it was really cool because, hell, you ever heard Hell on Earth?
Yes.
You got to see a lot of great engineers come through. The sound of Hell on Earth was something totally different, you know? I think that changed a little bit of the game of sonically how it was. But I did a lot of assistant engineering on that. I did a lot of changing two-inch reels on that.
Do you know when you're doing these albums that just because your ear has obviously grown as you worked in this business and heard more records, do you know when an album will be considered a classic, like, or when it's this sonically changing the game? Do you know as it's happening, or is it like 10 years down the line, oh shit, we just changed the game, you know?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Sometimes you feel it, you're like, holy shit, you know. I worked on Big Pun's album. You knew that was game changing.
Mm-hmm.
Just the entertainment of it, the feel of it, the energy. It was something different. You felt that, you know. But even like a Monkey Bars, Sean's first album, I didn't know it was gonna be accepted the way it was.
Right.
You know, and it was. I don't want to say a fear. I can't speak for everybody else, but it's like this is his first solo project. Nobody knows how they're gonna accept it, you know. You know, nobody. So that's fun too to see after it's released, and you gotta give it time too. People be like, "Oh, I made a classic." You don't know if it's classic,
right?
You know, you gotta wait and see. Well, can you play this album 5, 6, 10 years later, and it still hits the way it did when you first did it? That's a classic,
right?
Not. I just recorded this classic album. Like, you don't know.
Last thing with the younger generation, right? Everything's a classic. Like, right off the bat. Legendary.
Yeah. Classic hit. You know, like, you don't know. You gotta wait for the people tell you that.
Man.
You know, you can feel like, yo, this is amazing. You get that feeling sometimes, especially on certain records. Like, to me, music is magic. And if you feel the magic, there's something special going on. If you gotta, like, you know, accentuate, like, and talk about, like, yo, I think this is, then maybe it's not there. But you gotta wait for the people to tell you that.
Right.
That's the hardest part, I think, watching an artist. And as an engineer, you're part of that because you're creating it. You're, like, you're co-writing it. You're co-producing. You're helping make what they're doing. And you're just as nervous, like, how are the people gonna like this? Will Flex drop a bomb on this? You're waiting, but it's a great feeling to see when that does happen.
I want to talk more about some of the producers you've worked with. You know, worked with Timbaland, Swiss Beats, Kanye West, as I mentioned, Ninth Wonder, a boatload of people. When you work with them, is there kind of like a single characteristic or something about what they're doing that makes them kind of a great producer versus like a producer that you might work with where you realize, I got to produce this thing as well because they're not going to, they have no clue what the hell they're doing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me use Pete Rock as an example. I love Pete and we work well together. We had a little differences in the beginning when we started working on the first Smith & Wesson album, but then we worked on a bunch of projects after that. And there's this moment sometimes where it's just like, whether it's when he's doing the drops or when he's looking for a sample filling or a cut, and it's just like you just see and it's just like, holy shit, that's P-Rock. You know, when you work with some people more on a regular basis, they're just people. You know, what's up? How you doing? Like Pete, I love the Dallas Cowboys. Pete hates the Dallas Cowboys. We go back and forth all the time. It's like a regular, you know,
right.
talk.
I hate the Dallas Cowboys. Sorry.
That's
sorry.
Okay. Most people do, especially in New York City.
I grew up a Washington fan.
All right.
Interview's over.
Drop mic. But there's these moments where you just realize you get out of that, you like leave the studio world and you're like, holy shit, that's Pete, and that's why he's Pete.
Right.
Or a Swiss. I love watching Swiss come in. Because Swiss comes in with a record 80% done. You know what I'm saying? Has the concept, has the hook, has the ideas, giving you the feel. And by the time he's done giving you the sale, all you got to do is write two or three 16-bar verses and you got yourself a hit.
Right.
These guys all have a special characteristic that makes them who they are. Timbaland, Pete, Easy Mo B. Like, they all have something that just really is special about them that some producers just don't have. Some producers just make beats. Mm. I got to tell you, there's a lot of records I've done where the producer never set foot in the studio.
So he or she just sends the beat.
Yeah.
And then what do you do? I mean, what is your... I mean, so they say, Dan, you're engineering this, and then...
Who says that?
The email, I guess. I don't know. Whoever sent, you know, like... But then, what do you... I mean, so that was actually one of my questions, is when that happens, because there's so much talk about producers versus beat makers, right?
Yes. Please, let's do that.
When you just get a beat maker sending you, who says he's a producer, but not... What role... How does your role change in the studio? I mean, does the artist also become the producer? Do you just become the producer? Does everyone, whoever's in the room, kind of take the producer's hat on? What happens?
All right, well, 90% of the time, it's just me and an artist in the room. You know, an artist in the booth and I'm in the control room. It varies. This came with time. It wasn't like I stepped in my first session and was doing this, but, like, I'm producing the records. You know, I'm old school. I learned a lot from watching old school records and how they were made and stuff. And at the end of the day, the record producer's job is to produce the record.
Right.
You know what I mean? And fuck from a modern standpoint, but that was from choosing what microphones, what preamps, what musicians, you know what I mean? Like, they might not have wrote the song, but they're the ones getting the guitar sound on the amp. Decide, you know, you're producing the record from start to finish. That's my description of a record producer. You know what I mean? Someone who's coming in, you're directing the artist. That's a record producer.
Right.
If I email you a beat, that's not a record producer.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You made the beat. Hip hop does, I think, change that status. Some of it, I think, is like if you look at like a Mobb Deep, you know what I'm saying? Rest in peace, P.
Mm-hmm.
Havoc is the producer, but he's in the group.
Right.
So he's helping design the sound. P-Rock, CL Smooth. Peter's the producer. He's in the group. You know, we go on and name all the groups or whatever, but I think you got to be in the room from start to finish to call yourself a record producer. Because when they put the record out, if you could say that I started here with nothing and then this is what I came up with, then you produce the record. So I started taking it upon myself to do that. Direct the artists, do that again, change that line. I don't like your tone today. You know, like,
yeah.
It comes with time and it comes with trust with the artists as well. But that's what I do.
Because I also imagine, like, if I'm an artist and I get a beat, I would want, in my world, I would want to know what the person who made the beat was had in store for, like, the concept maybe behind the album, or kind of like maybe lyrically what he or she wanted. I mean, is that happens usually, or is that kind of, am I in a fantasy world of my own craziness?
It all varies on, like I said, like with a Swiss will come in and give you the record.
All right.
This is the concept. This is how the video is going to look.
Oh, shit.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Swiss is a salesman, man. Like, it was amazing. Like, he comes in and the record, and you're going to love the record. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the energy is crazy. The beats on 10, he's in your ear. Like, this is what it's going to look like. This is what you're going to be wearing. And it's like, yeah. Give me a pen.
Right.
But sometimes that's the artist's job as well. The artist is the one that's like, oh, I like that beat. I can visualize what I'm going to do on there. I've seen it all. I've seen the producers come with the concept. I've seen producers not even show the fuck up. But again, as the engineer, you're like you're the captain of the boat. So it's like you got to feel like some artists, they know what they want to do. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, your job is to help them make that come to fruition. Like, oh, this is what you see? Let's make that happen. Oh, you want to sing on this record and you're not a singer? Let's see what we can do. Let's try it.
Right.
You know, and let's try to make you sound as good as you can.
When you work with an artist that has that ability to sing, I'm asking a few plugins or questions, but are there kind of beats or instruments or just plugins that you would never, that you won't use? Like a Pharoah Monch, I think, has a great ability to do that. Sing as well as, I mean, obviously there's like the cocaines out there and everything, but Pharoah has that ability to do that. I mean, is there something like an instrument that you would never kind of use in a Pharoah Monch beat because it would clash with his voice?
An instrument, or
something you would plug-in wise that you would never kind of, that you would kind of stay away from?
I don't use auto-tune.
Okay.
I refuse. If people ask me to pull auto-tune, I don't have it. I don't do it. I know it's the rave, you know, it's the wave, but I don't do it. If you sing, sing.
Right.
You know, if you rap, that's it to me. If you can't sing, then find a singer. You know, and I get it, and I respect, you know what I'm saying, like that. That's what you do. I just, like, certain people come up and use those kind of plugins to. I don't sing, but I got this plugin that makes me sound like I sing, and it's like, okay, cool. But there's a that's there already. Like, don't try to be that.
Right.
Like, don't do it. When they come in and they're like, yo, I want to sound like T-Pain, or I want to sound, you're already messing it up, because there's already a T-Pain, there's already a Future, there's already a Lil Wayne. Like, why do you want to, you can't be that. That's already there.
Right.
So I don't do that.
Yeah, how much is your role of kind of, because that's the thing, like, you would have all these artists, like the whole point of when hip-hop was developing, rap music was developing, you would have, well, there's already an LL Cool J out there, so let's, you know, sound something like something else. You know, like, and you know, DMC talks about it, like, how they, there's already this group out here. We're not trying to sound like them. We're trying to sound, how much of your, now, and especially nowadays, how much of your job is to kind of push the artist to actually sound different and not whatever the hit is out there at the time?
I try my best. You know what I'm saying? Like, in this day and age, there's a lot of artists that aren't really artists. They're, for lack of a better word, posers. You know, with the Instagram and the Facebook, they want to look like artists, but they're not serious about their craft. You know, an artist, because they're the ones that don't want to sound like somebody else. They're the one that have their own sound, their own feel. They're a Sean Price that comes in and is like, fuck what everybody else is doing. Fuck what everybody else thinks. I'm doing what I do.
Right.
And that's what I think that's what people respond to the most, is when you have something different, you know? But at the end of the day, artists want to try what they want to try. I push. I'm like, yo, why would you want to do that? There's already that. But at the end of the day, you're paying for the studio time. You do what you want. But I don't know if we'll be working again together.
When you have artists such as like a Kool G Rap, who's obviously Queens, New York, and then like Ice-T, who's West Coast, is there, for sound design, is there, do you have to approach a West Coast artist and an East Coast artist two different ways in terms of how the final mix will sound or what you're going to use in those mixes?
Absolutely. And it's not even just East or West Coast. It's every artist, especially with the legends. Like, they have a sound that they've had for years, and it's like, and it's worked.
Right.
So it's like, you don't mess the formula up, you know? But what did Ice-T call it? The dust. gotta put the dust on it. You know what I'm saying? And artists like G-Rap, you just want to see the face. You know what I mean? Like, every artist has a different thing that they're looking for, but definitely I think the East and West Coast things, like, it's just the sound. It's just the way they grew up. It's what they listen to that help shape what their sound is going to be. The ideas that they have, the samples that they pick, the dust.
Speaking of Ice, I asked Ice prior to our interview if he had any questions for you.
Okay.
And first he wrote, Dan, he's good. So that was one. But then the second, he's like, ask him about how the music business has changed since you've been in it. So how has the music business changed? More the business side, but how has the business changed since you've been... Since you started to now.
Oof.
And then I guess, how has that affected the music creation process as well?
I mean, there's so many different ways to approach that, but I'll approach it as far as in the studio. When I first started... Like I said, you're loading up 2-inch rails, line and tape machines, and technology has changed so much where it's just so much easier to record, which to me is a good and a bad thing, because, for instance, I use Pro Tools. You know what I'm saying? I'm a professional engineer. I use Pro Tools. I feel like Pro Tools now caters to a consumer market.
Right.
Which is kind of an oxymoron to me. Like, you're supposed to be professional.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, when I was blessed, the studio that I was at in the late 90s was one of the first. It was Axis Studios. It was on 54th Street, right above Studio 54. Luckily, the guy who owned the studio, Francois, was a nerd and on top of all technology. And we literally got the multi-track Pro Tools first. When it first came out, when you went to the studio, you had to rent, because the tape machines were in the studios. Right. So you had to call Dream Hire or Jim Flynn, and you had to rent a Pro Tools rig if you wanted it. We were one of the first studios that had Pro Tools in the studio. So it was a blessing for me, because I got to learn every day on it. And like I said, it changed the game, because it saves time. I was just talking to somebody about mixing sessions. Mixing sessions sometimes took 12, 15 hours per record. But a lot of that was patching.
Right.
Changing rails. Rewinding. If you did a take with somebody... Let's say a three-minute song. Let's just say you did one take down of ad-libs or whatever, and you got halfway through the song, and you're like, let me do that again. You got to stop. And it would take a little while to rewind the tape to get back to where you were. Where now it's just space bar, go.
Right, right.
So these little things all add up, and it's just so much time saved. But like I said, I feel like now, like I look at a lot of these like newer plugins for Pro Tools, and they're designed for people who don't know what they're doing.
Right.
It's just like the kick plugin, hard, soft, you know, and it's just like it's cool. It's fun for people who really don't know what they're doing, but it's creating a false sense of I'm an engineer.
Right.
Because I could put the setting on hip-hop kick.
Right.
You know, you don't know your frequencies. You don't know how to get the compression to act the way you want it. So I think in this example of how the business has changed studio-wise, it's created a false pretense. You got to really find somebody who knows what they're doing. You know, the greats like Bob Power, Tony Maserati. These guys are geniuses, you know what I'm saying? They know what they're doing. They don't need to put the sounds good plugin on.
Speaking of plugins, how do you think that also like if an artist knows that you could punch, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how does that affect their delivery of a lyric if they know like, well, I fucked up here, whatever. I could just, you know, damn, just punch me. And how does that dynamic work?
That varies per artist. But I tell you, I mean, you've seen a list of artists I work with. I work with a lot of great lyricists, and a lot of these guys won't want to punch. Mm. And I respect that, because at the end of the day, if you can't deliver the verse on right here, how are you going to perform it?
Right.
You can't punch on stage.
Right. Right.
You know. But at the same time, pun. We'll punch every four or five bars, you know? So it varies per artist, but I really respect the guys that, no, let me do it again. Let me do it again. I work with Murder. We do 25 takes. Because a lot of times, to me, your best takes come in the latter part of it. To me, my biggest pet peeve is when I'm working with newer artists and they go in and they rap all the way down and they'll be like, yeah, double that. I'm like, and you don't even listen back to what you just did. You just slurred like half of your words. Like, you stumbled. Like, you don't even want to listen to it. So I really respect the guys that don't want to punch, want to do it again. And if there's a part that, you know, like I'm getting hung up on this one part, okay, we could punch. And then normally right after we punch and do it, they want to do it again anyway.
Right, right.
But like I said, you could punch on 2-inch, you know what I'm saying? But these guys that just want the easy way out, I don't respect that. Like,
lastly, what is, you've been doing this for a while and you've obviously worked with incredible list of MCs and producers. What is your favorite thing about what you do? Like, what gets you up in the morning and have you come into the studio to, you know, engineer, record?
The love. I love what I do. I've been blessed. When you first start, you gotta do anything you can to survive life. You gotta pay bills. You know what I'm saying? This is a job as well. But I've been blessed to be in a position and be able to choose who I want to work with. So it's getting to make great music, you know. It's having the opportunity to make history, you know. Like, some records, when people come in, might never get heard, but some albums might be classic and be playing for the next 30, 40 years, and that's amazing to me, you know. I love coming in with the opportunity to make history musically. You know what I'm saying? You may do it that day, you may not. But that's what it's all about, is making something that's going to be amazing, that the people are going to love. And more important, that you love. Like, I love this song. I love this album. You know? But the opportunity to work with amazing artists, amazing producers, good, and also good people, you know, that aren't even in the studio, you know, the promotions guys and, you know, people that, because it takes a whole, it's not just one person, it's not, from the artist to the producer to the engineer to the intern to the it takes everybody's work and energy to make a record amazing.
He's Dan the Man. Check him out more at danthemanpro.com. A new Sean P. album coming out August 8th. Dan, thank you so much for joining me on The Library with Tim Einico.
Thank you very much, man.
Bing bong in your face. Murdered the bastard. Emergency surgery plastic. Face reconstruction with the 8 heat and something. Touch you bad when you hit with the hard hog. P, my knuckles drag when the guard walk. I ain't old school. I ain't new school. I'm a dropper with the tool that pop out. I'm the shit up in my hood. I had 3 wishes. I wish that a nigga would step to the guard. When guard step, I step on your squad. Imperious Rex, the best definition of God. I swing things hurting. God body, aka the King James Version. Playing my shit, at the same time hating my shit. Don't play with me, bitch. I make your bitch play with my dick. Hey.
The King X Rock, the Riz, none higher.
Fuck rhyme better than me. Nigga. Nigga, I'm nothing to play with. Kneel down, kiss the ring. I'm the King X Rock, the Riz, none higher. Fuck rhyme better than me. Nigga. Nigga, I'm nothing to play with. God body, aka the King James. I used to disperse raw behind my mom's back, and she lived on the first floor. Hurt jaws, I hurt your feelings. Feelings get hurt, gun bursts and earthy ceiling. Big, appetite for destruction. Savage life, might strike and die, give you front. Write something, nothing polite, ignite the mic, slice something, lucifer curl. Rapping as you cue for a girl, my earl and your duke. Now you be the duke of the earl. Listen, don't make dollars, it don't make sense. I do make dollars, dumb balls, don't make sense. The education is all price, dedication, the medication and long nights. Smoking the pancake, work on the sign, a lot of dope for a handshake.
Hey. The King X Rock, the Riz, none higher.
Fuck rhyme better than me. Nigga, nigga, I'm nothing to play with. Kneel down, kiss the ring.
I'm the King X Rock, the Riz, none higher.
Fuck rhyme better than me. Nigga, nigga, I'm nothing to play with. God body, aka the King James Version.
The crown is mine. The crown is mine.
I'm not your friend, dude. Don't talk to me like that. The friend thing? We're not friends. Well, we're not friends. Be clear on that. Clearly, we're not. Stephen A. Smith voice. Clearly, we're not friends. Clearly. You being my friends as a 9, as a 10, as 11.